You're listening to Right Where You Are, hosted by New York Times bestselling author, creator, and speaker, Jason Wright. With inspiring guest interviews and Jason's unique lens on life, this is the place to see the good in the world, to lift and be lifted, no matter your starting point, to make a difference that matters. And we'll do it all together, right where you are.
Hello again, and welcome to Right Where You Are. This is Jason Wright. And I hope that wherever you are right now, that you are ready for what I promise is going to be a really fascinating discussion. My guest today is a friend, a mentor, and a publishing guru. His name is Chris Schobinger. Chris is a publishing industry vet. He's published numerous award-winning and New York Times bestselling authors. He is the publishing director at Shadow Mountain Publishing. And he's discovered authors such as Brandon Mull, Ali Condi, Julianne Donaldson, and I think the host of Right Where You Are. We'll get into that in a minute. I think so. Chris, he grew up in Southern California, but he also lived in Argentina, where he learned to speak Spanish fluently. He and his wife, Jennifer, who's marvelous, by the way, are the parents of five children and a spoiled Rhodesian Ridgeback, who I think is joining him for this podcast. Right, Chris?
She is. She's right here next to me.
Well, if she has corrections throughout the interview, I hope she'll offer them. Thank you seriously so much, Chris, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a delight to be here, Jason. I'm always happy to help.
So as we dive in, I just want to quickly set up sort of why you're here, and specifically so early in the life of this, you know, brand new podcast. I explained in our first episode why I thought it was really important for my wife, Cody, to be that first guest, given her impact and role in my life, my career. And as I said, and I hope anyone who's listening that missed that episode will go back and listen, I think it'll be worth your time, because so much of the goodness in my life has come from her. And I simply couldn't do anything in my life and career without her and her influence and support. And so I knew when I launched the podcast that I wanted Cody to be that first guest to sort of set the tone and really lay the foundation for what we're going to do here on Right Where You Are. And likewise, Chris, I knew that you needed to be second, because I think professionally, all of those things could be said about you. I owe so much of my career, the ups and the downs and the twists and the turns, to you. We'll talk about Christmas jars a little bit more in a moment, but without you, there is no Christmas jars. And without Christmas jars, there is no career. There's certainly no Right Where You Are. And so as this podcast moves forward, I think it's important for people to know this role that you've played in getting all of us here. And maybe today we'll uncover some nuggets that might be useful for aspiring writers listening to this episode. Christmas jars. Let's start there, Chris. Tell us a little bit about discovering that little manuscript and how you felt, or what you thought the first time you read it.
Yeah, Jason, first of all, you know, every publisher's bread and butter are authors. And so I have valued your contribution to my career for many years. So I guess it goes both ways, right? And I you know, Christmas jars, I tell you, when it came in through the slush pile, it sat there for a while, believe it or not. I mean, you know, we have lots of manuscripts coming across our desks. Eventually, my managing editor at the time was like, have you read that manuscript, Christmas Jars? I was like, oh, no, I need to. And finally, I said, okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to sit down this evening. I'm going to read it. And so I did. And it was, you know, I read in one sitting. And I had an immediate connection to Christmas Jars, mainly, I think, because my wife and I adopted our oldest son. And, you know, now 23 years later, we still have a very close relationship with his birth mother. So Hope's storyline was one I was cheering for from the very beginning. But I also love the tradition of the Christmas jar itself, because it felt like this, you know, call to action at the end of the book. And really, anybody can do it, right? Anyone can put their loose change in a jar during the year and then give it away anonymously to a family in need. And it's such a simple idea, but it, you know, the reaction of these people receiving the jars are just so priceless. And I mean, and you've seen that over and over and over again.
Well, I appreciate that. And it reminds me of the first time I met Sherry Dew, the former president of Deseret Book, Shadow Mountain. The book was on its way to stores, wasn't it yet out? And I met her for the first time and she shook my hand and I introduced myself, of course. And she said, oh, I know who you are. And you're the one that wrote that manuscript that every time Chris Schobinger talks about it, he cries.
Yeah, I'm kind of famous for shedding a tear when a good novel gets to me. I remember, this is a funny story. I remember when we were reviewing early movie of the movie Charlie. It's a very old,
great film.
Classic. Yeah. So we were reviewing it, just sort of the executives at Deseret Book, and I was sitting next to Sherry Dew, and by the end of the movie, I am bawling, I'm just crying, and Sherry looks over and she hands me a tissue. and it was about then that I became, okay, well, if we need to know if this has an emotional appeal, we'll ask Chris to read it.
Well, I suspect, I know I had that reaction. I bawled the first time I saw Christmas Jars on screen.
Oh my.
I tried to separate, am I having this emotional reaction because this is this baby that I've been watching and cheering for to come to the big screen for more than a decade? Or is it because the storyline itself is so poignant and is sort of pulling me along? What was your reaction to the film?
I 100% agree that it's the story and the narrative that just pulls you in and speaks to the heart. I mean, there are human relationships happening within this book that are so critical. And so, yeah, no, it's real. And I've watched it, I don't know, three or four times. And every time it gets me. I mean, I know it's coming and it still gets me. So yeah, it's, I think, yeah, it's a special movie.
So you read the book, you publish the book, you become a part of sort of the publishing side of this book and now movement. But what about a personal connection? Has your family adopted the tradition, been a part of the tradition? What does that look like in the Schobinger home?
Yeah, absolutely. More so when my kids were younger. I mean, we still actually have a jar right now out on the counter. But I have loved that they have all participated. And they all put money in the jar. And so, yeah, it is definitely something that our family sees and enjoys to participate in.
Do you have one particular memory of a jar that you gave away when your children were younger that stands out?
I don't know if I have one particular memory, but it's just the, I mean, I do remember how memorable and rewarding the planning of how we were going to anonymously deliver the jar to the family need. That was always fun and always exciting. And then later getting to hear from my kids about how good they felt. It's truly a remarkable phenomenon that you've created that taps into that empathy muscle that I think is so important.
Yeah, it's remarkable to me that jars are given away not just, you know, at Christmas time now, but when people see a need, they don't wait. I got an email over the weekend just a couple of days ago from a family that received a jar after a house fire that's just so lovely and moving. And I think it's wonderful that this was such a part of your children's lives from an early age. I hope he's listening right now, my dear friend Duke Brubaker from Kentucky. He has been a part of this movement since the very, very beginning. And he tells me now, you know, his teenage sons have no memories of Christmas without a Christmas jar being an integral part of how they celebrate and honor the holiday. And every year, I know I'm going to get a photo. He's going to text me a photo of them giving the jar away and sharing their story. And it is unbelievably humbling to know that the book has become more than just a little novel, but a movement that has not just changed my life, but I think others as well. So tell me, Chris, what What does that product director or editor do in publishing in 2021? So much has changed in the industry. What do you do?
I think there's really just a couple of key areas. And the first and foremost, just finding and publishing great writers, right? That's my main responsibility. And, you know, easier said than done. But acquiring a manuscript like Christmas Jars, for example, is magical because it doesn't happen very often. But when I do come across a submission that I connect with, I usually want to read the full manuscript before reaching out to the author to basically talk about a publishing deal. But every so often, I'll be halfway through a manuscript when I know I have to publish this book. Or I'll read a manuscript and love the writing style, but I may not love the story. And in that case, I may reach out to the author and ask if they have anything else. And I remember this happened with the first manuscript from Brandon Mole, the one he submitted to Shadow Mountain. Loved his writing, but the story wasn't a great fit for us. So I asked him what else he had. And boy, that's something I would always recommend to writers, is always have something in your back pocket, you know, because you never know when someone's going to ask you that. But Brandon said, you know, I have this short story that I could turn into a longer book, which eventually became Fable Haven. I guess the second half of what I do is managing our editorial team and working with designers as we plan, you know, cover art and interior design of a book. And there's a lot of collaboration. And then every editor works closely with sales and marketing and retail teams as we plan together the promotional strategy. So it's definitely a lot of planning and a lot of acquiring, you know, new authors and new talent.
Yeah, that turned out pretty well for Brandon Mole. I think it seems like I've seen him on a couple of bestseller lists through the years, Chris.
Yeah, Brandon has, I mean, I think he has 17 New York Times bestsellers now. He publishes with us. He publishes with a couple other houses in New York. And I mean, he's a very prolific author that, couldn't happen a nicer guy. And boy, still crossing our fingers for the Fable Haven movie that is being considered right now. So we'll see. We'll see if they can get the right team together.
Yeah, I know he and I talked about that 6 or 7 years ago, and he said, you know, it just feels like this takes forever. And I said, you are preaching to the Christmas Jars choir, brother.
Right, right.
Because that took 14 years. So
yeah, it'll happen, you know. But you want, like you said, boy, you want to get it right. And boy, they got Christmas Jars movie right. So that's what we want for Fable Haven.
All right, so. Readers ask me all the time, hey, Jason, you announced a new book on Facebook or Instagram, or I read your column about this thing you're working on. Why can't I read it tomorrow or next month? Or, I mean, I could maybe wait 6 months, but why does it take so long for a book to make it from the day Chris Schobinger emails you back or calls you back and says, hey, let's talk about a deal? Why so long until that thing is in a bookstore or on Amazon?
Yeah, it all comes down to the running room needed to not only, you know, go through the process, the production process and editorial process and making sure that you're creating a beautiful book, but it's also the running room the sales team needs to pitch the book to all of the players and the key accounts across the country, making sure they know about it and they have space for it and they're excited about it. And so it's just the time needed to create the buzz. And so by the time it does come out, you know, all the ducks are in a row, everyone's on the same page and we can have a successful launch.
So in a perfect world, someone listening today sends you a manuscript that is, it's good, it's tight, you love it, you pitch it to your team there, they love it, a contract goes out to that writer in the next couple of weeks. In a perfect world, how long do you want from the day a deal is signed to the day that it is on sale?
Yeah, usually, I mean, every publisher is different because they each have their own timelines and how they do things. But I think it's not unusual. I think it's pretty common for that to be a year out. So, you know, we get the manuscript, we like it, we send you publishing contract, and, you know, look forward to the following year at this time for the book to release, that sort of thing.
And it must be for you, those must be anxious months, because you have championed a title, you have cried about it when you've pitched it in sales and marketing and executive right. meetings. So for you, as the sort of the chief cheerleader of that book, whatever it is, this must be anxious months for you waiting for the drop day.
Yeah, it's a lot of preparation. It's in some ways, you know, it's like leading up to a wedding. You know, you're just so nervous and you're excited and you hope everyone else will love what you think is going to be a beautiful thing. And so yeah, there's definitely some nervousness. I think every editor has that.
What other interesting changes have come along in publishing? You've been at Shadow Mountain for how many years?
I've been in the book industry for 30 plus years, 33 years, something like that.
What are the, other than ebooks, which is obvious, what would you say are some of the other really significant changes to publishing?
Yeah. Well, and I will say, you mentioned ebooks, that it was interesting because there was a time where the industry thought that ebooks would quickly eclipse real books with real pages, right? But of course, that never happened. And in fact, physical books are still preferred. If anything, they're making a little comeback. And I will say a huge thing now is, boy, social media platforms have just been a game changer. If you don't have a social media platform as a writer, unless your manuscript and your story is just like the freshest thing ever, yeah, there's just so many great stories out there, and with authors that have spent the time to build their brands through social media. And nowadays, an author is a critical part of the marketing team, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we expect that the author will help promote and market the book. And so the more you can show the publisher that you can help make a difference in the outcome, the successful outcome of a book, then boy, that's just feathers in your cap. So yeah, so that's probably certainly something that's changed.
So besides social media and really embracing that, let's talk to some of the aspiring writers, novelists that might be listening today. Yeah. What advice do you have for them? And let me ask you this preface, how many submissions would you say, just on an average, that your team gets in a week or a month or a year, whatever number you want to give?
Oh boy. I mean, we get hundreds of submissions every year. And I mean, even in some weeks we get dozens of submissions. I mean, it's just, we're a smaller publisher, relatively speaking, you know, so the New York houses are getting triple, quadruple that. Boy, it is so important to try and differentiate yourself and know your demographic and know who you're writing to. I think the best advice I could give, as I thought about this, is really make sure that your manuscript is ready before you send it to a publisher. And the best thing you can do is to join a writing group. I mean, editing and revising is such a critical part of the writing process. So the more you can surround yourself with smart book people, the better you'll be able to know how to improve your manuscript. So, and getting feedback from your mother doesn't count. Okay. You really need feedback from as many readers as possible, readers who can be, you know, trusted to tell you the truth and give you honest and helpful critique, because then you'll start to see a consensus, right? And I will also say that attending writing conferences is a great place to meet and connect with writers. If you're like, I don't know any writers where I could join a writing group. Well, writing conferences is like key. It's such a great little place to just mingle and meet new writers. And, you know, it's not easy getting feedback sometimes. It's also not easy to receive rejection, right? But it's just part of the industry. But, you know, if you're a writer, rejection is going to happen, period. I mean, I always remember my favorite rejection story is a rejection letter sent to Dr. Seuss. I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but, you know, the Dr. Seuss, the one who has sold 300 million books, you know?
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah. And so part of the letter includes this line, quote, "too different from other juveniles on the market to warrant its selling." End of quote. You know, so, you know, in this day and age, innovation is key. And I just say, you know, bottom line, just don't give up. And if you've been at it a while and no one is biting at your manuscript, then switch it up, you know, work on something else. You might need to find a different genre, but if you are the type of person who has to write to be happy, then keep writing. Eventually, I think eventually, your unbridled passion to write and improve your craft will get you published, period.
That's great advice. I often tell the story of my favorite rejection letter. It was actually four Christmas jars. And it actually came from an agent in New York who said via email, "I really liked this concept. I just wish someone else had written it."
Wow.
Yeah. Talk about the warm and fuzzies. I saved that one for sure. Who else over the course of your career have you discovered? You mentioned Brandon Mole. You mentioned the host of Right Where You Are.
Yeah.
Who else do you feel like? And I know to say I discovered so and so is not in your sort of humility DNA.
Yeah.
But certainly you've played a huge role in some authors that maybe our listeners have heard of. You want to talk about them?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, one of the things that one of our very first children's fantasy series that we published was from an author named Obert Skye, Levin Thumps and the Gateway to Foo. And it was such a wonderful children's fantasy series that did very, very well for us. And Obert Skye is one of the nicest authors I've ever worked with. And we learned so much during that process. And eventually children's fantasy became our sweet spot. And it was soon after that that we discovered and published Brandon Mole's debut Fablehaven. But I loved when we got a manuscript, a debut manuscript in from Ali Condi that, you know, was just trying to, you know, find a publisher. And Ali Condi was a highlight because she's just in my top 10 nicest authors to work with again. And Shadow Mountain also publishes like nonfiction and memoirs. And personally, like for me, another highlight was publishing the autobiography of NBA Hall of Famer John Stockton, because I'm just this huge Utah Jazz fan. And he's just the nicest and most unassuming man and really funny too. But yeah, so it's, I don't know, there's just so many. It was so fun to publish a book that we did in conjunction with Dick Van Dyke. And, you know, meeting him and getting to meet just authors and some celebrities that you wouldn't typically obviously get to meet is certainly one of the perks of the job.
Well, I love all the authors you mentioned and have had the pleasure of being around them or working with them. And Obert Skye is one that I just love his voice. He's talk about prolific. He is again published with you and others out of New York. He's one to Google and look up some of his work in the last couple of years. I think is just groundbreaking and hilarious, and the kind of thing that that I can read aloud with my kids, which I really, really like. Speaking of new titles, are we interested in making any kind of news today, Chris Schopenhauer?
Absolutely, yes. Shadow Mountain Publishing is very excited to announce the publication of a new novel by Jason F. Wright called Bus to Gulf Breeze. And we have it slotted right now for either a March or April 2022 release. So about a year from now. Boy, I'm so excited. I feel like this has been a long time coming. I've just been chomping at the bit for another novel from you. And I just think this is some of your best work. There's so much heart to this book. And anyone who has ever been in a family relationship or have had difficulty in a relationship and has wanted to figure out how to heal and to find forgiveness and redemption, boy, this is the book. I am so excited for this, Jason. Yeah, I think you just hit it out of the ballpark.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, our listeners should know that when I first sent that to you, the reaction was, eh. Yeah. And I was invited to sort of dig in and rewrite. And I did that. I got some additional reader feedback, in fact, from probably some people that are listening right now. And then the rewrite is what caught your eye. Right. And I think we have still a little bit of editing and polishing that we'll do over the next month or two, but I am really excited. I remember when you and I had our first chat after you had finished reading that rewrite, you asked me which of my books I thought it most sort of felt like or took me back to. And for me, it's obviously The Wednesday Letters.
Right.
And you about screamed right through the phone from 2,000 miles away that you agreed. And I think that's good news for people listening right now that felt very much at home with that story and with those characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it really is the characters, Jason. That's what you're so good at, is making these characters feel real and ones that you don't want to leave when you end the story. So well done. And boy, this is going to be just a great contribution to both our libraries.
I'm excited. So next spring, we'll be looking for Bus to Gulf Breeze and maybe a really creative book launch tour. If we can figure out some of those details.
Yes, absolutely.
I see myself driving a school bus in my future. So this theme of the podcast, we talked a lot about it in that debut episode with my wife and in the introduction. Which people can hear along with episode one. There's a separate introduction trailer that sort of launches the podcast. But we've talked about what Right Where You Are means and how we arrived at that name. If I had to ask you, Chris Schobinger, what Right Where You Are means, what would you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually thought about this when I first heard the name of your podcast. And for me, Right Where You Are means like knowing what grounds you, or specifically what drives you as a writer. Everyone is dealing with something hard, and sometimes it feels like life is just one big, dark, ugly storm. And it makes me think of a quote that I have on my wall from President Henry B. Eyring when he dedicated our building. He said, "The moral darkness which seems to increase in the world is your opportunity. Whatever offers light will be to the discerning eye more and more attractive," end of quote. And I think this can apply to writers as well. If your stories or your blogs or whatever you're working on can offer light and hope, you will have an audience right where you are.
That is so well said. So well said. Thank you. And I love that. I love that quote. Well, we're only here at episode two, so I don't know that we can call it a tradition yet, but we plan over the weeks and months and years to come to ask this same question at the close of every interview with every guest. And so I pose to you, if our listeners forget everything about our discussion today. Mm-hmm. The authors you've worked with, the books you've published, what's coming next, advice for new writers. If they just forgot all of it, but they remembered one thing, what is the one thing that Chris Schobinger would want them to remember and never forget about your journey?
My journey. I'm so bad at giving one thing. I think the culmination of my journey so far has been the result of surrounding myself with people that are smarter than I am. And you don't get very far in life, or you don't find much success, at least in my opinion, by traveling by yourself. So the successful person who thinks they got to where they are today by themselves is a liar. I just think real progression is going to require us to be vulnerable, and it's going to require us to ask for feedback on what or where we can improve in our personal lives or in what we create. And honestly, that is not an easy thing to do. But when the feedback comes, I use these words on myself, which helps me to keep moving forward. And that is, accept criticism, but reject rejection. And I think it's so important for us to be willing to be corrected, but never give up. I have received lots of rejection in my life, and but I also know what I'm good at, and if it doesn't appeal to one person, that's okay. I just got to find the right person that it will appeal to. And I think that's my one thing is know who you are, know what you're good at, and just move forward with that belief.
So gorgeous, just beautifully articulated. I love that. And having known you for a number of years, I can add a second witness that is very much who you are and how you live your life. Thank you so much for giving us time. One of the things I have promised myself I would never take for granted in this life is time, particularly from those who are as busy as you are. So thank you for your time today on this episode of Right Where You Are. You are a good man, Chris Schobinger.
Thank you, Jason Wright. You are a very good man as well. And I am a better person just by knowing you.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Right Where You Are. For more information about Jason and his projects, visit him online at jasonfwright.com or on social media at facebook.com/JFWBooks or on Instagram at Jason F. Wright. And be sure to subscribe to Right Where You Are wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Wright Media Productions. Copyright 2021 by Jason F. Wright. All rights reserved.